let's welcome today my good friend Kirk.
Aloha, everybody. I'm Kirk. I'm an alcoholic. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. Mike, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. Tricia, thank you for leading. I took some notes during that. That was beautiful. Nick, welcome with 30 days. Robert, congratulations for 6 months. Rosanna, 6 years, way to go. Colleen, 15 years, wherever you are, way to go. Beautiful. And Jim M, 16 years. It was nice speaking with you before the meeting. And Roger, 32 years. And Roz, 48 years. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Awesome. My sobriety date is June 5th, 1992. My home group is a meeting called Mount Soledad Men's down in San Diego. It's been my home group for 20 years. It meets Saturday morning at 9 a.m. My sponsor goes to that meeting. My grand sponsor goes to that meeting. I've got a bunch of sponsees that go to that meeting. I'm currently the H&I rep there. And my life is always better if I have a commitment there. And thank you to all the people that put on this meeting. Let's see. So 30 minutes. I've been sober more than half my life, so 30 minutes isn't long enough to tell you everything, so I'll try and keep it short and sweet and give some type of decent message. I hear people talk from the podium and say, like, I didn't fit in, I didn't fit in, I didn't fit in, like when they were little. I did fit in. I'm from Huntington Beach originally, and my spirit, when I was a little baby, my spirit was not all damaged and broken. I did not have fear. I didn't have doubt. No guilt. I didn't have shame. I didn't walk around judging everybody else and judging myself. I actually have a picture of when I was a baby. And for you people on Zoom, there's the picture. That's me. I have proof that I was not damaged when I was little. Now, over the years, I've done lots of H&I and I've done lots of interventions, and I have seen babies that came from like mothers on crack and who like were beaten up. And I have seen babies be born whose spirits were already damaged. That's not my story. My spirit was whole and perfect. And I loved, like, if you guys were doing anything when I was little, I was all in. I loved doing it. It didn't matter if it was sports, music, academics. I just loved being with you guys. And I did everything. I'm the youngest of four, and my family had me, like, my mom, I live in San Diego, and I just drove up here this morning, and I drove by. My mom used to work at the JCPenney in Huntington Center. It's still there. I just drove by. I turned to the left, and JCPenney right there where my mom worked. And both my parents worked. And so football and basketball and baseball and playing the violin and singing in choir and being an altar boy in the Catholic Church, those were all, I didn't know those were like inexpensive ways to babysit a little kid. And I just love doing stuff with you guys. I didn't even care how good I was. I like to help you. You know, and I just did everything, and I ended up being like a really good student, and I performed well, and I just loved doing stuff. And by time I was in sixth grade, I was at a place called Hawthorne Christian School. There was one in Fountain Valley. There was one in Hawthorne also. I don't know if that one's, the one in Fountain Valley is closed, but sixth grade, halfway through sixth grade, I'm the little valedictorian, and I have a little girlfriend, and I like perform, and I won this like Southern California Spelling Bee, and I play the violin, and I sing, I do all this stuff. And all of a sudden we're moving down to San Diego. My dad got a new job. My mom got a job as a store manager at the Fashion Valley or the JCPenney down in San Diego. And we're moving. And the day, my last day of school at Hawthorne Christian School, the dean of students said, Kirk, took me in the office. Kirk, what do you want to be when you grow up? Blah, all this stuff. And I'm like, I want to be a professional football player, a doctor, a lawyer, and the president of the United States. And this was the reaction of that dean. We were walking in this hall back to the dean's office, and there were all these pictures on the wall, both sides of the wall. And the dean said, those are fantastic goals. You keep doing exactly what you're doing, and those will come true. Look at these people. There was somebody that played on the Dodgers at the time had gone to that school. There was like a senator that had gone there, doctors and lawyers. The dean said, all these people on the wall had been right where you at. If you keep doing the same thing you're doing, those dreams will come true. And that's who I really wanted to be, like all my heart. And we moved to San Diego, and that was the first time I did not fit in. I didn't know anybody. It's halfway through sixth grade. You know, I'm kind of the new lame kid. You're kind of lame when you're new. And I end up finding the partiers. You know, you're new. It's like somehow I wanted new friends. I knew. Now, mind you, before that, I'm the youngest of four. My older brother, I'm born December 2nd, 1963. My older brother was born December 3rd, 1957. And I was born at 11:45 p.m. So on my brother's sixth birthday, I was the only gift he got. So he used to take me everywhere with him. So I would always hang out with kids 6 years older than me, doing everything. And so the first time my older brother smoked cigarettes, I smoked cigarettes. The first time he drank, I drank. The first time he got stoned, I got stoned. So I was, you know, before we moved to San Diego, I had been dabbling in things. And I wanted friends at this new school. And I knew where my dad had hid his weed. We had a liquor cabinet, a pool table, food. And my parents were never home. My mom worked nights and my dad traveled. He was an executive who traveled all the time. So it was like, all the guys in here, come on over. I had instant friends and we partied. And I have to tell you that I had, when I was little, I had a belief system that I believe was good. It's like, I wanted to do good things. I wanted to become someone good. You know, I wanted to really like make a difference in life. And by time I was in high school, you rush me through junior high school and get me to high school. My whole belief system had changed. I had a belief system that like I would party every day till the day I died. I believed that. You know, I believed you were lame if you didn't party. You know, I even believed you couldn't have fun unless you partied. You know, I thought my older sister, who was terrified of my father, she was straight. We called her back. I'm old. We called them squares when I come from. She was a square and I didn't want to be anything like that. You know, so I just went on, you know, partying and really my life became very, very narrow. And what ended up happening was in Southern California, if you play sports well, you're the man. I became I was already an athlete from the time I was young. I really got into sports. If you have really good looking girlfriends, you're the man. That was another thing. I had a really good looking girlfriend. If you can fight, I became a fighter. I had been fighting my whole life and the youngest in a big Italian family. Fight. And if you party, you're the man. All those. And I did those. And I chased this life. I just chased it. And I end up getting in the restaurant industry and on the beaches of San Diego. And everything I loved was right there. The restaurants here in California, Southern California, you can party in that whole young lifestyle. It was every, and I started, that was a thing in my family. You had to get straight A's and you had to get a job when you were 14. And so I got straight A's and I got a job when I was 14 and I could basically do what I wanted. And, you know, I had no idea that this book talks about having a physical allergy. I had no idea that from the first time I put alcohol in my body, I was allergic to it and that I would want more and more and more. And my body would need it. And I had no idea I had a mental obsession. I could have all these very, very important things. And all you'd have to do is tell me there's a party tomorrow night. And that's all I'd be thinking of. I wouldn't even be thinking about this important stuff I was doing. I'd be thinking about the party, let alone once you put anything in my body, I could have really important things. And you put one drop of alcohol in my body and I needed, and that's all I would think about. Drink, 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 drink. And, but the big thing that alcoholism did to me was I had a spiritual malady. That spirit that I showed you that was not broken. It wasn't broken when I was little. You know, my father, God rest his soul, he had started driving fear into mine and my sibling spirit because he was an angry, violent drunk. You know, what he used to do to our family, they call child abuse now, but you know, you just get the crap knocked out of you. So I started getting fear in me and my spirit started to get damaged. There was damage and, you know, I had tools to fix my damaged spirit when I was little. It was give 110%. Fight, compete, succeed, win, achieve, accomplish, acquire, and become somebody. That's where I come from. You're supposed to become somebody. My dad was an executive. My aunt was an attorney right here in Pacific Palisades. And my uncle was a doctor. So we're supposed to become somebody. And I was, you know, I was on that path, but I did not know that what I was doing was taking all this action to damage my own spirit. My dad started the damage. And then I started, I'd lie, I'd cheat, I'd steal. I wouldn't live up to my own expectations of myself. And I was damaging my own spirit. And I did all this stuff that just didn't coincide with the values that I had as a little kid. And I'm needing more and more alcohol just to be okay with myself. And, you know, I could have left all that out and shown you that I do qualify. I have a picture. I have another picture. I'm a big fan of pictures for people on Zoom. I have a picture of me in here. In fact, you can pass. So I went on that path. And by time I was 25, I was a sous chef of a restaurant. I'm 25. Actually, I hit my peak at 20. I was at UC San Diego. I got submitted. You can pass it right around. Just pass it right around. And I played lacrosse. Lacrosse became my sport. And at 20 years old, I was at UC San Diego. I got submitted as an All-American from the Western Coast Lacrosse League for All-American Lacrosse. I mean, it was really, I had an amazing girlfriend. I was the lead line cook of a really good restaurant down in San Diego. And that was probably like my peak. Cause everything kind of went downhill after that. You know, within 6 months of that, you know, I'm being put on academic probation. And when I get put on academic probation, I don't say, okay, I'll do better. I flee and leave and go to chef school in San Francisco to party because, you know, I can't live with that. And the girlfriend dumps me and the job lets me go. You know, I used to, when I was 14, actually about 15, I remember one of the waitresses was getting a hard time from one of the patrons at one of the restaurants. And they said, get Kirk from the kitchen. And I come flying out and I just go fight men, you know, as 15 years old. And that's all. It's funny and humorous when you're 15 to go fight two 30-year-old men. But when you're, you know, when you're 22, 23, 24, 25, and you're supposed to be the lead line cook or the sous chef to go running and fighting customers, that's not, you know, that's not acceptable behavior. And, so by 25, I was the sous chef of a really nice restaurant in San Diego. And my father passed away. He died of cancer. He was 50. I was 25. And I was a lunatic alcoholic working 80 hours a week, drinking and drug just constantly. And you know, to all of the people like Trisha, I would want you all to see that like I had it together and I had this great life. You know, but to, you know, Mike White and all of his buddies, I'd want you to see that, like, I was this, pardon my language, I was this badass partier, you know, I'd had this double life going on. And, you know, I had tools on how to live out there and how to survive out there, but I did not have tools on how to deal with very, very challenging spiritual situations. So, you know, my father died. 25. I'm the sous chef of a restaurant. Within 6 months, I'm the line cook at another restaurant, which is a step back in your career. And then 6 months later, I'm a breakfast cook at another restaurant, another step back. Then 6 months later, I'm a graveyard cook of a dive restaurant. And I just moved east from the coast. I moved east, you know, and I'm just a mess. And this kitchen manager at this restaurant says, you know, I'm going to have to let you go. You need to get help. You know, you're not in a good way. And I mean, this was a dive restaurant and that happened. That conversation with that guy happened within a week. That picture I showed you was January 13th of 1992 at the Metallica concert. That's the San Diego Sports Arena. That's my friend Pete Belasco holding up my head in the drunk tank there. And the guard, I never saw the concert. The security guard took that picture And I woke up the next morning on Pete's living room floor with puke and the picture there. And I saved that picture. And that wasn't my bottom. Within 30 days of that, I became homeless. I started living in this 1978 Ford Courier truck with my girlfriend and our two dogs. And I realized I'm a tough guy. I mean, I can do anything. And I only lasted in that truck for about 3.5 months. I mean, it was miserable. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but I was what they call a hope to die drunk. And that I would drink and 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 just go, don't wake up. I just wanted to die. I did not want to wake up. And then coming to in the morning, puking my brains out, blood, and it was just messy and having to start all over. And the problem with me and alcohol is alcohol made that lifestyle okay for 3.5 months. Right. And I was a pariah to my family. I was 145 pounds. I'm about 225 now. So I was 80 pounds lighter than I am now. And I had this long, nasty hair. I was in a trench coat. I was bloody. I was just a mess. And alcohol made that okay. And then until one day, June 3rd of 1992, I'm drinking. I'm stealing booze from stores and I'm drinking, and it wouldn't take away the pain. That it had taken away the pain of that horrible life up until that point. And then this day, it would not take away the pain. And I was in a park in Vista, California, right near the Vista courthouse, which I had done time in that courthouse and in that jail there. And I cried to the universe, please help me. I was so sincere. I'm crying, please, please help me. And boom, 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 within 24 hours, I'm being brought to you guys. And no offense to anybody here, I didn't like any of y'all. You know, I didn't believe in any of y'all. I didn't believe in AA. You know, I didn't believe in any stupid God. You know, I was raised Catholic. I did not believe in that God any longer. But you know what? The worst thing was I had quit believing in myself. You know, I quit believing in myself. And I did not want to stop drinking. Remember, I was going to party every day till the day I died. Did not want to stop drinking. But what happened was you all had this sense of spirit, really the strength of spirit in you that I had lost long ago. And no combination of alcohol or money or jobs or girlfriends or any, and I had tried switching everything and I tried everything. No combination of anything was bringing that strength of spirit back that you all had. And that's what I wanted. You know, and I have to admit, I thought I could get it from doing the meeting before the meeting at the meeting, and the meeting after the meeting. I thought I could get that, you know, spiritual awakening by doing that. And it became apparent very quickly. I heard you guys say, you know, get a sponsor and go through the steps. Yeah, I did not want to do that. I really didn't. I was at the La Jolla speaker meeting and there was this guy and I heard the third tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. I was in the front. It's a big, back then it was like 400 people at this speaker meeting. And I heard that and I go, oh my God, I don't have a desire to stop drinking. I'm out of here. And I walk him back. And Bob Palmer was there. His friend was speaking there. He's in a suit at the top and he goes, where are you going, Mr. Happy? I go, I just heard that desire to stop drinking is the only requirement. I don't have a desire to stop drinking. I'm out of here. And he goes, well, if you're going to leave, let me at least get you a cup of coffee. And why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? And all of a sudden I'm talking. He goes, it sounds like the state of California, a bunch of ex-bosses, ex-girlfriends, your entire family. They all have a desire for you to stop drinking. And I was like, oh, I turned around and went back in. And Bob became my first sponsor for the first 6 years. And he got me into the first thing. He got me into the steps, you know, and we read I wasn't an alcoholic. And he goes to page 21 and he starts reading it, you know, and it's beautiful. It has these things that are right in here. I can't always remember them when I'm speaking, but it says, at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. That was me from 13. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. Yes. He's a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Yes. He frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. Oh, yes. I was an alcoholic. And I have to tell you, it was actually a relief when I realized I was an alcoholic. Because when I got here, I thought I was a loser. I had all these bad names. I used to walk around talking crap to myself about myself. You're a piece of crap. You did it again. You're no good. All this stuff. And it was like a relief, you know. And then he got, how much time do I have? Like 10 minutes? Because I can go through the steps or I can not bore you. 9 minutes. Okay. Too much for me to go through all the steps, but I'll tell you a couple key things about Bob taking me through the steps is the second step came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I did not believe I could be restored because the book talks about a different sanity, the insanity of the first drink, knowing that. I had never had sanity about that. I had never thought about it. Bob said the steps will restore me to this sanity. I did not believe it. I didn't believe it at first. And he said, well, would a power less than you restore you to sanity? No. How about a power equal to you? I had tried a bunch of those. If it was going to restore me to sanity, it had to be a power way greater than me, right? And I was going to this meeting called La Mesa Men's Meeting. And it was one night, the meeting after the meeting, sitting with Bob. Bob came down to visit and he's with all his cronies. And I'm hearing their stories. And I go, God, they used to be just as crazy as I did. And they're no longer insane. And I made the mistake of saying, Bob, I think this BS will work for me. I've had the second step. And he immediately got me right into the third step. And within 5 minutes of me telling him, I believe this will work for me, I go, I'm leaving. I don't believe in God. And he goes, that's cool. You can leave. Just don't talk crap about AA that it doesn't work. Because it's a 12-step program. And he goes, and you're only on step 2.5, kid. Remember, you have to go through all 12 steps to have the spiritual awakening. Remember, he used to say, it should have said, having had a spiritual healing as a result of the steps. He says, because your spirit's so damaged, you're going to go through. And he goes, my spirit has healed. You're going to go through. He goes, remember you said you wanted to give yourself a shot. He goes, so don't talk crap about AA. And I'm like, how did he know I was going to leave and talk crap about AA? Because that's what I was going to do. And he said, don't talk crap about AA. Just give it a shot. He goes, and it doesn't say anywhere that we believe in God. He said, it doesn't say that anywhere. The only thing place that says we believe in anything came to believe a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. And he goes, you just told me that. And so I didn't leave. All of a sudden, I'm saying the third step prayer. And he ended up being super patient with me. And I don't know about any of you all, but I did not do the steps happily. I did them begrudgingly. He would say, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. In my head, when he would say, do this, my head says, no way, no way, I'm not doing that, no way, forget it. And then out of my mouth, okay. And I'd go do it. You know, actually, he'd go, yeah, how long do you need? A week? Great. And I'd wait, procrastinate 4 days, maybe 5, sometimes 6.5, and then I'd do it. And I owe that man my life. You know, he knew how much of a thief I was. So he used to only do step work with me either if I was in my recovery home or my sober living or at his office. If you remember his office. And he'd never invite me to his house because he knew, like, I'd case it to rob from him later. And one day he calls me up and said, come to my house. Here's my address. And he got me to his house and he got me in front of this mirror and he said, you've had a spiritual awakening, a spiritual healing as a result of the step. You're not the same angry, violent, dangerous punk you were when you got here. What do you think about that? And I was blown away. I hadn't even noticed that alcohol had just been removed from my life. And that I'm like, I was going to conferences and conventions and speaker meetings and he had me dragging, you know, back then you could throw 8 guys in the back of a truck and just haul them to meet it. He had me all over Southern California, guys in the back of my truck. You know, because in the fourth step, it says, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves harder into helping others. He says, that's you. And so he had me like setting up chairs at every meeting I went to, greeting people, making bad coffee, literature person, hauling people all over. He goes, these are things that you're qualified to do. And, you know, I had made that decision when at the third step that really what I was going to do was go through the 12 steps and flip you all off when I got to the end and leave. And that didn't happen. I was so like, I was just blown away because remember I told you, and we saw the picture that my spirit was whole and perfect when I was little, and I had tried everything and everybody I knew. And I mean, I have in my family, like very successful people. They had tried to help me to figure out how to bring that spirit back. I had tried everything and nothing worked to bring that strength of spirit, that calmness, that peace, that love, that compassion that I had when I was little. Nothing worked until AA. You know, and really what ended up happening was I started believing in you all first, all of you first. And then I started believing in some weird God that I had not believed in when I got here. And at the end, all of a sudden, I started believing in myself. You know, and you know, I'd love to tell you I've just been like this spiritual giant the whole time since then, these 29 plus years. And you know, that first 8 years I chased career and I chased her and I got relationships and you know, AA became like periphery at times. And but Bob had given me, and you guys had given me this such a strong foundation. Whenever my alcoholism starts showing up, when I start talking crap to myself about myself, you're not good enough. When I have to start working 50 hours a week when to do the same job you're doing in 40 hours a week, you know, that I can see. And, you know, and I'd get this, and then I just, anytime that would happen, I just put my tail back between my legs and run to you guys and jump right in the middle and start greeting again and setting up chairs and doing, you know, and workshops and steps and, you know, calling Bob and he's saying, you know, hold on, it sounds like you need to pray, you know, and I'd call him going, D-d-d-d-d. He goes, sounds like you haven't prayed about that. Nah, you need to call new guys. And so I really, since my home group, that Mount Soledad Men's has been my home group since right after 9/11, I decided I wanted to have a family after 9/11. Ah, and my daughter was born September 10th of 2003. And so she's 18, and it was just this really from the outside, like people who aren't in AA, even people who are in AA, this insane 17 and a half year custody battle for my daughter because her mom's got some mental illness. And what, but if anyone remembers, Bob used to say, you know, AA is about living our wildest dreams. He said, you know, if I told you, and welcome again to any new member. I don't think any new members announce themselves, but if there's anybody new and really anybody in your first year, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I think it was Roxana, or I think it was Roxana said, you know, I hope you get what I got. You know, I hope you get what I got, because this AA and you guys is the only thing that I've ever done, and I continue to do it, that keeps my spirit strong and whole. And everything is possible, you know, full of love and light and possibility, and everything is possible. Bob said, live your wildest dream. Really, this particularly past 20 years has just been like one wild dream after another. I met my wife in AA. We've been together 17 years. She's amazing. She's got 38 years. And so I can't pull anything over on her, you know. And I was working. I met Tricia and Mike here because I'd been working up in LA for 4 years up until the pandemic. And nothing for me has changed during the pandemic. I still go to 5 live meetings and 5 Zoom meetings. I sponsor a bunch of guys. I do a bunch at H&I. And my life is incredible. And I'm right in the process now of making this next wild dream come true. And it's like, oh, all I have to do is write down the goal. I'm almost finished. Thank you. I see you looking at your clock. Write down the goal, kind of put it to the side, and then dive in the pray, meditate, do step work. I still do step work all the time with my sponsor and my sponsees, and then go do service. And my gosh, life is incredible. You know, my brother is somebody. He got to retire at 39 with lots of money, right? And he is somebody out in the world. You know, and as I stand here, I will tell you, you know, thank God I never became anybody. Thank God. You know, AA and you all have given me everything, everything I need. You know, lack of power is still my dilemma. If I go into the parking lot right here and my car can't start on my own power, I can't get it very far. But I know if it can't start, I just come right back in here and all of you can push me as far as we need to go. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving me such an amazing life and so much power to get all of my, make all of my dreams come true. Have a wonderful day. Aloha. I'm Kirk.
Thank you so much, Kirk. That was absolutely amazing. Okay, so it's now time for questions. If you're in the room, please raise your hand, speak loudly, and be concise. As a reminder, the speaker will repeat your question into the microphone for everyone to hear. If you're on Zoom, please send questions through chat. We will be alternating back and forth. And our first question's on Zoom. It's Sarah D. And Kirk, she asks, if you had to make amends to your siblings, and how is your relationship with them today? Are any of them one of us?
Have I had to make amends to my siblings? And if I had,
How is your relationship?
How's my relationship with them?
Is any of them one of us?
So, oh yes, I had to make amends to all of my siblings, and Bob showed very, even though they're my siblings, I still got afraid beforehand, just like making amends to my mother who was alive and my father who was deceased to go to his grave. And I used the 9-step prayer, give me the strength and direction to do right, the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be, over and over and over. I have amazing, they were just so grateful I didn't like kill myself and that I actually liked myself, because they thought very highly of me, way more highly of me than I did before I got here. And I've got amazing relationships with my brother, or both my brothers and my sister. And my one brother, I actually worked with him and lived in San Jose for a year, and that brought him, and I got very active in Los Gatos AA, and that brought him, he's been sober now 18 years. So
beautiful. That's awesome. Thank you. Anybody in the room? Question?
Questions. Come on. Comments. Yes. Prayer and meditation today is very, very active. So I wake up and the first thing, and I've got a prayer and meditation sequence that I really start. I start right from asking God protection and care with complete abandon. That's what Bob showed me. It says it right on page 59. And I go through all the prayers and the meditation all the way through the 11th step prayer, and where it says in the 12 and 12, it basically says to say it 6 times. So I do that, because it says we do it and then we repeat it several times. And then it says once more, we repeat it. So I go all the way through that. And then all the way through, show me what I can do each day for the man who is still sick, which is in the 12th step. And that's about, it takes me about 20 minutes to do that in the morning. And then throughout the day, like driving here, I'm praying throughout. Before speaking, I went out and prayed and meditated. Sitting here, all meetings, I pray and meditate. I end up probably having maybe an hour, anywhere from 1 to 2 hours of prayer and meditation a day. I close the night doing the 10th and 11th step prayer and meditation. So quite a bit. Thank you for the question. What's your name again? Mateo, pleasure to meet you. Aloha. So glad you're here. Thanks for the question.
Okay. Nothing on Zoom. Anybody in the room have a question?
Yes. Aloha, Sharon.
So,
and if you could repeat the question.
Thank you. What are my practices of the sixth and seventh step on a regular basis? So I've got it right here. Here, I can. Sorry, I didn't pass this around. This is fourth step on this side, and then 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 on that side. I did that one probably about 4 weeks ago. And I just did another one, but I gave it to a sponsee. I've got another one here. Here, we can pass this one. So I do 6 and 7 quite frequently, especially with Zoom. Zoom makes it really easy because I'm on Zoom meetings. So I'll end up writing 6 and 7. So I have to say to be willing, because sometimes I don't want to be willing to look at it again. I go, oh, I just did it 3 weeks ago. But a lot of times if I'm working steps with a new sponsee, then I have to go through it. But if anything changes, Bob Palmer, he showed me that our character defects, it comes right from the fourth step in the 12 and 12 are the seven deadly sins. So he taught me, and you can see on these sheets, pride, anger, greed, gluttony, envy, lust, and sloth. So I write those down quite frequently. Pride, and when I notice I'm being prideful, and I have to admit, driving up here, some of the reasons I was praying was because all of a sudden my pride started saying, oh, I want to look good. This is that me. Oh, I want to look good, right? So I start saying, oh, help me be willing. And then I look at that, and you can even see on that one, I bet it says for pride, I want to look good in AA and at work, though in my career. Those are the two places. So I'll quite frequently, and I'll put anger, greed, like if I get pissed off, my wife is usually the one. And then greed, I pick and choose who I want to help in AA a lot of times, right? I was homeless on the street. Sometimes I don't want to go and stick my hand out to the homeless guy that comes into an AA meeting, and that's greed. That's where my greed pops up. So I have to play, I'll say the seventh step prayer, and I have to say them really, really sincerely. And I do it frequently because those things all pop up for me. So hope that answered it.
Thanks, Kirk. We had another question. Yeah.
Back here. Gosh, that's a great, what does my current higher power look like? That's a great question. So over the years, particularly this last 20 years, I've gone to Thich Nhat Hanh retreats, and I've studied Buddhism, and I've done like lots of different meditation and yoga and prayer and I've tried lots of outside things. But a little bit before the pandemic, it says on page 13 of the big book that it says, my friend promised when these things were done, I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. So I get a lot of new guys. So, and Bob said, just do what's in the book. Bob held up the big book in the 12 and 12. And he said, these two tools, you can go, if you just do the program, because I was in a treatment center and I was bringing him those worksheets and things. And he, at one point he ripped them in half and threw them in the trash. And I was so offended. And he said, yeah, this is all you need to heal your spirit and help anybody for the rest of your life overcome anything that they're going to ever, or any spiritual malady. And so I've gone back to just doing all basically the 23 prayers and meditation and service that are outlined in the big book in 12 and 12. And I get so full of, the result is that right now my higher power is this amazing love and strength of spirit and compassion that is in all of you. And when I get centered, it's in me. And all fear goes away. And everything is possible. It's really incredible. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer, but I hope that answers it. Last question.
Okay, this is the last question. It's an easy one. And so it's from Don online. And he said, what, please, is the men's meeting time and day in San Diego? And he also wants your contact information, but we can.
Aloha, Don. My contact information, my phone number is 619-944-0914. In fact, if everyone could take out their phone and please take my number. If there's anything I can do for anybody in this room ever, ever, I don't care, 24/7. If there's anything you ever need, please call me. I'll tell you my phone number again two more times. 619-944-0914. Trisha's got it and Mike's got it. It's Kirk. 619-944-0914. Really, anything. If anybody in this room or on this Zoom gets to a place in your life where you need help with anything, please reach out. Please. My men's meeting is Mount Soledad Men's Saturday morning, 9 a.m. It's in La Jolla. It's a wonderful, wonderful men's meeting.
Thank you, Kirk. Let's give Kirk a hand. That was awesome.
Thank you for having me.